Hey everyone, it's episode number 41, and it's a big announcement I have to make today. A lot of you guys asked me the last 2.5 years, Pascal, we would love to do your podcast, but sadly don't speak any German, and this is what we're doing today. So Haie im Schwimmbad is transforming to sharks in the pool. Good luck, I think it's also a title which we can use. But we still stick to the concept we had in the past. We invite incredible leaders, people who are an inspiration for all of us. And hopefully they tell us a little bit about their life, about their journey, and we can listen, we can learn. And today I'm super excited to get Jin Choi, a senior leader from the Meta Group in Europe. And Jin, the stage is...
Hello, my friend. Hi, nice to meet you. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I'm not sure I'm an inspiration or leader, but I'm giving the best. So to support.
Well, that's
team.
What I heard from a lot of people who know you quite well, but we will see over the next 40 minutes. And Jin, do you want to tell a little bit about you, who you are, where you're based, and what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm based in Berlin since 13 years, but I'm in Germany over 40 years. I'm originally, I was born in South Korea. Moved over to Düsseldorf when I was a kid and went to school, studied there, worked for a certain time for, Bertelsmann and RTL Group, both in Cologne, but also in Hamburg. And then changed over to Berlin, moved over to Berlin to pursue, one of my passion points, which is music and music industry. I was looking after MTV networks, both on a German level, but also Central European level in regard to the ad sales before I joined Meta in 2013, which basically is now more than 10 years ago. I'm going into the 11th year as mid of this year. And that's why the people at Meta would consider me a Meta sour. Yeah, I find it semi-funny, but they find it funny. So, yeah. And at Meta, I'm looking after commercial partnerships, and I think most of the people in the industry might know we are kind of organized into verticals and into industries. And to simplify it, at Meta, over the course of the now more than 10 years, I've been looking after all industries except e-com. Yeah. So currently, the span and scope of my role is looking after business and agency partnerships, ad tech partnerships, but also CPG and retail, which is fantastic because I'm very passionate about all these industries. And I'm looking for those partnerships in the German-speaking region, while at the same time, because we admit I have multiple roles, multiple hats, I'm also overseeing the brand, business, and partnerships on an EMEA level. But that is like more a strategic approach, where I bring together brand heroes across EMEA, to set us up for, the best initiatives and ideas on how we can support brand advertisers better, to successfully communicate and do marketing across our platforms and solutions.
That sounds super interesting, Jin. And how would you describe it in the last 11 years? Is it now hard for you guys when you speak to CPG companies and partners to tell they need to invest more into digital versus TV? Or how was it in the beginning? Was it in the beginning more convincing at times, or was it a change at all?
There was quite a change. I mean, we are talking about a span of 11 years. I would say that with both tech platforms, technologies, ad tech, but also apparently the media consumption dramatically changing over the course of the last 11 years, there has been a tremendous journey for all of the industries. First of all, if we look back, 2013, there was kind of like a pivotal moment for back then Facebook, now Meta, but back then we still were Facebook. There was quite a pivotal moment because up to 2013, all our platforms were more desktop centric. And basically back then, Mark Zuckerberg made a very bold decision. It was called an internal lockdown, not in regard, COVID, but an internal lockdown in regard to how we approach our go-to-market strategies, how we, set up for product development and engineering. And that lockdown was called a mobile lockdown because we could see by the data that the consumption of the mobile device, our mobile devices, basically the smartphones, was tremendously, exponentially, progressing forward, and more people all around the globe were, spending more and more time on the mobile. And that was a point when basically we as a company decided we need to foster for that. Yeah, we need to adapt to that consumption trend, and everything was shifting to the mobile. And by that, I mean, it's not only us as a platform company, but all of the market pivoted stronger towards mobile. And apparently that also landed with brand advertisers, yeah, or traditional advertisers. Apparently performance advertisers and e-commerce companies, yeah, were following that path a little bit earlier because it was fundamental to the business model, yeah, to have channels that allowed for interactivity and sales. And by that, the conversations over the course of the 10 years, 11 years have also changed with, you know, more traditional marketers, if you will.
And is it for you? Because I started in CPG. So CPGs, for those who don't know, is a consumer packaged goods. It's from FMCG companies. In the past, these companies 20 years ago, they spoke with their media agencies and the media agencies made the plans. Why do we need in the future media agencies? Because at the end, they can speak, the marketers can speak directly to you. Or do I see it wrong?
Yeah, I think there are several reasons why agencies actually make a lot of sense. And it really depends on the organizational setup and how you operate as a company. Yeah, and it apparently also makes a difference if you're a multinational or international organization or, you know, multi-regional or probably just operating in one region. So there's no straightforward answer to that, but to contextualize it a little bit more. Apparently, agencies create higher neutrality, yeah, if you're talking to them in regard to investments and plans. Yeah, if you would talk to me in splendid isolation, I mean, we try to be consultative the best way possible. And I would always say that apparently it's about the right mix and not about, you know, a single channel that you're using or a single platform partner that you're using for your marketing communication goals. Ultimately, it drills down to something that is, you know, very old, but also still true. It's about reach and frequency. Yeah. And apparently we have quite a strong position in regard to both dimensions or to both media metrics. We have in most of the countries where we operate high or market leading reach, and our solutions allow for a very granular targeting of options. We have different goals, marketing goals that you can optimize your communication towards. And I would say we have also quite market leading, you know, features in regard to steering reach and frequency, which are very important criterias for general communication planning. Yeah, so we are both great partners in that respect in regard to planability, if you will, and the campaign outcomes both for advertisers, but also the agencies alike. Yeah, and I mean, there has been in parallel to the technical progress in the market over the course of the last few years, been a tendency towards in-housing as well. Yeah, and there are clients where I would say that, you know, it makes a lot of sense to in-house. Yeah, there are clients and partners as well where I would say not sure if they should do it, yeah, because it asks for high investments in regard to competencies, technical setups, and high effort. So probably this sheds a more differentiated light to the question where agencies sit. And also what I notice is, at least in the regions that I'm looking after, that agencies also progress. Yeah, they are also willing to learn, optimize the business systems, optimize and adjust and calibrate on the portfolio of services. And there's been huge progress. So that's something that I actually have seen over the course of the last 4 years. They are progressing very fast, at least in the German-speaking territory, and have interesting offers. So yeah, it's still very relevant to have an agency.
And this is what I really admire in the collaboration with, in the past, it was Facebook, now Meta. I can tell from my experience we had, I'm not sure if you still remind, in 2017, my former company, PepsiCo, we made this PepsiCo Digital Day. And when we planned it, we invited, of course, also the media agency for TV. And we were thinking, let's see how this is going on stage if we bring the digital people. But it was super friendly and it was not shouting on others, and I really admire this. Also, what you're saying right now,
of course,
it seems to me you go really, sounds now funny in a meta perspective. You think what's best for the customer, And when we talk about your products, I mean, you people know your products, mm-hmm. WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook. What would you say, because I see it in my private household, my wife is using always Facebook, I'm more the Instagram guy. How important is Oculus and AI and now the Ray-Ban glasses? Because you have a huge portfolio. Can you tell us a little bit about the importance, diversity of portfolios and what you're targeting it?
First of all, I want to stress and echo what you said on what is priority for us in consulting our partners and clients. It's about their goals. So if they are successful and we consult them in such a way that they are successful, then we have done a good job. Yeah. And if another channel or another mix or another solution from probably from a competitor or another publisher is working well, then we need to learn from that to improve our performance and our contribution to the total communicational impact that our partners want to achieve. So that is super important that you see it from a holistic perspective. In regard to our portfolio, the way we operate and have optimized and developed our products is basically that we are more people-centric. It's not about a specific platform. It's about your marketing goal and about the people that we can reach. The big difference is you are not compared to a traditional TV station or most of the publishing offers, we communicate, or our solutions enable marketers to communicate one-on-one at a large scale, whereas many traditional channels are one-to-many. So that is a huge difference. So we say basically that we are more people-centric than potentially other players. And by that, it's actually kind of, agnostic to the placement. So what we've been optimizing is that we, for your marketing goal that you are aiming for, for the person that you want to reach, we try to offer the most effective and efficient reach across the platforms. So basically what we promote nowadays as a best practice, because we don't not only have several platforms, but we also have several placements and also different formats. We encourage, based on data and based on marketing science outcomes, that advertisers go for a 6+ placement. Which means you have six plus different surfaces, and spaces where you can reach the person you want to address. So a lot of, also our, coming back to your extended question, how important is AI? We use machine learning and artificial intelligence to allow for a successful optimization of that kind of placements.
And this is super interesting, also about the shopper journeys. This is what I'm hearing out of. I'm working in the, as you know, in the CPG business, and your customers are CPG customers. So it's not 100% digital. So we have customers and shoppers who go to physical stores. How would you say has it improved in the past about geofencing, about translating digital advertising that people go into store? Because this is what all senior managers ask me all the time. How can we ensure this investment is linking into rate of sale and at the end at sales?
Yeah, basically, ultimately, we always try to bring evidence for the impact of campaigns across our different placements. So marketing science is something that we are heavily invested in and where we also encourage our partners, as long as it allows, from a resource perspective, to measure really everything that is measurable and to identify the right set of data and evidence points that are important to, benchmark yourself in regard to the market performance, but also for success and what good looks like. So I'm heavily invested into media mix modeling, which is apparently relevant for offline sales performance perspective, but also brand building. On the other side, we partner with, Audience Project or GfK or Kantar and Nielsen to create evidences that investments are done efficiently and effectively across our platforms, but apparently also other platforms as well. We are the German region or across EMEA, heavily invested also into cross-media measurements because we want to support our partners to identify on the best media mix, which still is something that doesn't fall naturally into place. You still need to invest a lot into marketing science.
Thanks for sharing this with us. Super interesting. What is your favorite Meta product you're using daily? Your clear number one.
My clear number one, I'm super old school in that respect. I'm also a blue app person, which means I'm actually quite a heavy user of the Facebook app still. Yeah.
It's super interesting because when I may interrupt you because
next to WhatsApp, I have to say sorry.
Yeah,
I have so many WhatsApp groups. Yeah,
WhatsApp is super effective. We have all groups also here now on KSA. The thing is, what's interesting for me, my wife and my friends are more and more using Facebook when they're in the age of 35 plus. And they said, Pascal, if you're moving to new locations, if you want to have Facebook groups, this is unbeatable. This is where I hear a lot of positive feedback because most of, I would say, the Gen Z, my experience is more on Instagram. Maybe it's my observation. I'm not sure if I'm right, but would you see it similarly to this?
No, but actually, I would phrase it differently. So first of all, we are also growing with Facebook across all markets. Instagram by now is also for the younger audiences, again, the number one platform to go to, also in regard to incremental growth. And we've seen, you know, a change in the way people would use all of the apps. Yeah, but that's also because of the addition of new features and new products across the platforms. Yeah, you've been mentioning the groups. Yeah, and that is something, for instance, that I'm also heavily invested in on Facebook because we have so many relevant expert groups, special interest groups, groups where communities come together to share on the passion points or the interests. And that is something that I find highly interesting personally as well. And we can see that it's just kind of like a shift on where people spend time within the app. Yeah. But apparently also there is a slight, no, I wouldn't say Instagram is younger, but it covers a wider range of age span. Whereas, you know, the Facebook app in the German speaking region has shifted towards, you know, a different age span, where the consumption of, you know, the time spent of the young audience is apparently stronger on Instagram. But the number of registered people also in the young audiences with Facebook is high. They just prefer to spend more time on Instagram. Yeah, okay. Which is fine because, you know, that's why we are people-centric. It's not about platform centricity in regard to how marketers can use the platforms. Going back.
At the end, you have all the products for
exactly.
All time.
So basically, if you have a campaign that is, you know, for young adults, 18 plus to, let's say, 29, our algorithm will support you to reach the right person regardless of the platform. So if a young person spends time on Facebook and Instagram as well, our algorithms will optimize for the best efficiency and effectivity in regard to the marketing goal that you have.
Super clear. And how would you say are products like MetaQuest? And for example, I saw in the United States, I'm a little bit jealous, you sell this Ray-Ban partnership, these glasses, which get really good reviews when I saw it.
Yeah.
Is this more playing for the future? Or would you say, no, it's really arrived now in the market?
I don't have the latest Quest sales figures top of mind. I just know that we have kind of like, you know, delivery shortages. So the sales are very, very successful. So it is definitely something we leave a strong footprint. But apparently VR or AR or mixed reality devices don't have the market penetration compared to, you know, mobile phones. So I would consider it an early investment where we, from year to year, with every instance of device that we launch, pivot stronger towards mass market. Yeah, but if you ask me for current relevance for every marketeer, I would say that from a strategic perspective, everyone should have an eye on it. But I think you don't miss out on anything if you don't necessarily have an augmented reality or virtual reality campaign now set in place. Yeah, but apparently this and the progress in that area and the investments that we make in that area will further scale and increase. And then I'm coming back to quote Mark Zuckerberg, who, when he announced the metaverse 2 years ago, basically said it's a journey over the time span of 5 to 10 years. And that is what I support as well.
This makes super sense. And he said an interesting little Mark Zuckerberg. Have you met him? I'm quite sure you met him.
I met him. I joined, like more than 10 years ago when the company was much smaller than we are now. And I had the fortune to meet him in several meetings and situations.
And did you recall what it left with you? What was your impression, or was it too long ago to give a feeling
amazing
how it
leader.
Was for you?
Amazing leader, because it was all very early stage. Yeah, as I said, in 2013, we pivoted to become a mobile company. And apparently, back then, Mark was much younger. I think when I first met him, he was 27, 28. And what I found impressive is we had a meeting in where we discussed hurdles, blockers, opportunities, and marketing and ad sales. And he was definitely not an ad sales experienced person. But what left a big impression was that after, you know, having conversations in a smaller group of sales experts, Mark's positions and point of views towards topics, experts from the industry, including me, addressed, yeah, he could reframe it and create such a fresh perspective towards everything that was stated in regard to opportunities, but also blockers, which was mind-blowing. So strong leadership, exceptional, intelligent person, very adaptive, very fast thinking. I was impressed a lot. So back then, I mean, we were starting to ramp up our commercial activities. Before I met him, I was like, wow, okay, he is this young person. Yeah, he apparently had strong ideas, and Facebook apparently was already impressively big back then. But then I realized, okay, that is not a coincidence. This person is an exceptional leader.
This is super interesting. I had a good, and what's a luck, I was invited 2 times to your headquarters. I'm not sure if it's still Menlo Park in California. And of course, we went to this Facebook sign, and on the back of the sign, I think there was written Sun Microsystems. And I asked my colleague, or your colleague, I said, why don't you have the money to make it back? And he said, no, this is coming from Mark, because the former company here was Sun Microsystems, hugely successful in the 70s. But maybe one day they failed. And if we are not doing an exceptional job, we are maybe also on the backside. Is it? Would you recall it like this? Was this a story? How I recall it? Was this
Yeah, that is exactly the story. And it's more true than ever. Yeah. I mean, from a long-term strategic perspective, we have three products which are very mature. And those are WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook. And they are tremendously successful. They create an incredible reach. The consumption is not decreasing, you know, and on the opposite, it's increasing. And by that, along with all the new fantastic products, I think there's a lot of stuff that you still could be excited about. But also the nature of people is there is nothing brand new. Yeah, and by that, it looks like, okay, it's consistent business. And when the metaverse was announced as a long-term investment, you know, I was getting thrilled. Apparently, it takes some time because the investments are huge. We're building a lot in regard to infrastructure. It's a lot of, you know, research and development going on in regard to the hardware, because you need devices, surfaces, yeah, which allow to be used, you know, day to day in multiple situations where people are in. Yeah, and you cannot, you know, I mean, some people already spend with VR, AR glasses, yeah, their time outside, but it's not like the mainstream thing yet. And I think this will progress as, along with, you know, miniaturization of the devices, longevity of batteries, higher CPU power, etc. Yeah, so this will all come. But, oh, I lost the point. We started with a question on. Sorry.
No, we started with a question on the sign, on the back sign of
the... back sign, exactly.
The story about
so, it. Yes, exactly. So this will all come. And I was thrilled about the new vision, because it also shows you need to reinvent yourself. Yeah. Especially when you're a tech company. Yeah. It's not a one-dimensional axis. Yeah. You need to have the right strategies in place and build on things where your core competences are, but go along with what people expect on the one side, but also define new opportunities by investing into research and development. And there's an internal company value, which is stating this journey 1% done. And it existed 10 years ago when I joined the company. And that is more valid than ever with all the new metaverse innovations coming into place. Yeah, so yeah, it is true, and it's still there. This some microsystem, backflip of our company sign, to remember us. Let's learn from where others have not been successful.
And this is a super interesting story, and I can tell you something. I stole a couple of times this 1% clause. Also, 2 weeks ago, when I launched a fantastic new product in KSA, is Galaxy is the number one chocolate in the MENA region, and we launched a beverage which hits the market by storm. And I wrote to my colleagues on my team, and I said, guys, this is the beginning. The journey starts 1%. I refer to Mark Zuckerberg, so I stole it with pride. But I can tell you, you guys are always an inspiration for me. So thanks for this.
When I look back, you told...
I steal it all the time, and I learn a lot from you and also your colleagues over the last years. When I think about the job you're having, you're in a leadership position. I would like later to a little bit hear about your leadership style. But how was your career before you came to Meta? I think it was, of course, not a walk in the park. Is it a little bit you can tell where you had maybe ups and downs or challenges? Because I think it's not given to have this high profile job you're having right now.
I would say with the senior leadership role that you have, it's never a walk in the park. Because even if things are good, then you have the responsibility to look after the right initiatives and investments and tactics and strategies, create a long-term perspective so that it stays good. Yeah. So it is actually never a walk in the park, and there are always challenges where you need to reflect. And apparently after some years, you build on a broader base of experiences, which is very helpful. And me, myself as a leader and also a manager, and my interest is always, I have a learning mindset. So I'm trying to learn as much as possible from different areas to keep up with what is asked from me, which is to create that vision, that perspective, which is long-term, yeah, also in times when things are fine. And I think that is the big difference about great versus average leadership, that success is sustained, because leaders would have that kind of, you know, scope and vision in front of them, and encourage and support their teams, yeah, to exactly, yeah, be successful in that direction. Yeah, but next to the daily challenges, apparently there can be situations in your professional career, and I think that is something that also your listeners might be interested in, which are probably more challenging than other challenges. Yeah. And what are the key takeaways? I can share one thing with the company where I've been, you know, confronted with incredibly stretched goals. And the biggest challenge there was, I immediately knew this is truly not achievable, which put me under stress a lot. Yeah, my teams as well, because I shared it to them. It was a large team. They were like, this impossible. Usually I'm a very positive person that accepts every challenge, but it was a huge challenge. So back then it kind of, you know, created a situation where my experiences, my tool set was probably not robust enough, yeah, to have an immediate answer on how to tackle that. And looking back, I would say there was no easy way out of that situation. Yeah, and I actually reflected on that phase of my career a lot, and I have some key findings. The first one is, you also need to be strong in pushing back at the right time when there's the moment for it. I didn't push back on the goal. That is one key insight. My assumption is they still wouldn't have adjusted the goals, but it's okay. Then the next thing is to steadily and continuously contextualize around what is happening and how you are trending and tracking towards the goal, instead of waiting, you know, for the typical quarterly business reviews, annual reviews, and status updates, and create much more leadership about context, being much more proactive about it. I'll be very open here. I was like, glad when that business review meetings have happened and wouldn't look out, you know, to proactively ask for additional ones. Yeah. But that is a key takeaway. So go where probably that's not the most comfortable place, but it will create, you know, for your manager, a higher confidence, and he's really on it, or the team is really on it. Yeah. And the thing is, looking back then and what my teams and I did, I think we made most of the right decisions and right choices, but still it didn't help, you know, to create a more positive environment due to several aspects of how business happens. And there's another thing where I totally changed my perspective too, is I felt more like I'm being played back then. Yeah. And that is something that I would, in that same situation, treat totally differently. I would lead and not lack on what I'm doing. That is probably the biggest difference. And even though I know it's ultra stretch goals, I would play to win.
This is also a nice title for this episode, Lead, Not Let, Be Led. Super nice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Super nice.
Yeah, and you know, there's one thing that makes a huge difference also. The outcome might be the same, but it creates a different momentum and also a different connection to those who you are reporting to. Are you playing to win, or are you playing not to lose? It makes a huge difference. where you create different mantras, you create a different vision, you create potentially that small part or portion of additional performance, yeah, that will make a critical difference. Yeah. So it was a long and a lengthy period of reflection where, and that is probably another insight, you have to be brutally honest to yourself and open to feedback. Yeah, that is the best way you can grow. Yeah. So being in the same situation again, I would still say, wow, crazy goals, but I would definitely completely tackle it with more experience and, yeah, you know, broader base of sets and a totally different attitude.
How important is family in your career and leadership and all this journey? Because I'm quite sure you were married at this time already, right? When you had this experience and you came home and you have maybe not the mind to be a good family father and anything. How important is family at these times?
It is super important, but at the same time, it's also, I'm speaking very personally now here. When I had this challenging phase in my career, I was also having, you know, challenges with my relationship, yeah, which didn't help. So it was kind of like a situation that you could consider as a double whammy, if you will. And it was not easy as well, but it helped me in my personal growth because I also had certain, you know, patterns that I brought to the relationship, which were not helpful. And along with that whole situation, which wasn't easy at all, I started also to reflect on them, which helped me to grow as a person, as a communicator, and ultimately as a partner. The key takeaway there is don't start with the others, start with yourself. It's a very simple thing to say, but hard to, you know, kind of put into life and or bring to action. The second thing is focus on really what's important if things get overwhelming. Yeah, I'm by now really good at focusing and bringing myself into a position where I'm looking at the right things compared to, you know, 10, 12 years, 15 years ago.
And this is, I think, the beauty in getting older. I'm not sure if you perceive it similarly, but I hear it when I talk to you. I'm turning 50 this year, and I have to say the charming thing in getting older is experience and to see things more out of a meter perspective. So looking back and also reflect, and also when I visited your office, I saw this post ruthless prioritization. Mm-hmm. And this is something we use more and more. Am I perfect in this? No, I'm not. But this is something you inspired me as a company to focus more, because you can't do everything. If you try to make 7 things right, you lose. Yeah. Now I learned make 1 or 2 things very good and leave the rest. That's probably the best thing to do, right?
If you're successful in one thing, you will just set so much momentum and energy free. And the momentum of success really can pull teams forward. Yeah, you shouldn't underestimate that. And yeah, that is something that is next to, you know, ruthless prioritization. There's another, you know, cultural value that we follow, which is don't mistake motion for progress. Yeah, there's always a lot of noise going on, but really try to understand what is true progress and what is a lot of noise. Yeah,
this is also a very good quote.
But and you grow by that. And that kind of, you know, if you truly reflect that and bring it and make it actionable by, you know, having it reflected with actual situation and challenges you have been in, yeah, those quotes can be very powerful.
And it seems you guys live these quotes. This is what I definitely hear. What is, before I start my last question, the only scripted questions, by the way, what is the thing people would say when they had the good luck that you were the leader or was this leader, what they have learned from you, what they have got from Jin? What would you say are the 1-2 things you gave to other people when you see them in a couple of
I try to encourage people for more openness and being truly open for feedback. Because feedback truly is a gift, and it's tough to deal with feedback that is potentially not positive. That is one thing, but you know, from my personal experience, it yielded my best personal growth. Yeah, and it was tough feedback also I was going through. Yeah, both professionally but also personally. But these were the moments where I truly grew as a person. Yeah, and understood like how I can use that to be leading, not lagging. This one. And the other thing that Tim would say is he is a person that always tries to do things better and improve things. So I'm never accepting the status quo. Sometimes they probably hate me for that, but it's like if we would come out of a project that has been tremendously successful. I mean, I allow for the moment to cheer and have a party on this, yeah. But I would probably be the first one to say, what could have been improved? How can we make it better? How can we, you know, create something that is even stronger? That is me. And it comes back from, you know, simple educational things, probably from my mom, yeah, who raised me with that kind of, you know, mindset. Yeah, how, yeah, she was kind of like saying, you could have tried harder, or why didn't, you know, why did you didn't you deliver on this or that? It's high expectations, yeah, on yourself and others, but also allowing, you know, an open conversation on, make it inclusive process of thinking and living and improving things. Yeah, that is potentially another thing they would say. Then probably they would also say, going back to the leadership style, I'm always saying, like, I'm trying to support, because I have incredible talents, yeah, team of talents at Meta. I'm trying to be very specific about them and where I can support them personally best and enable them so that they are empowered and actually do the stuff that needs to be done, the jobs that need to be done in their way. Yeah, so I'm not like interested in how it is getting done. I'm more interested in what is getting done and try to identify and support them in their way to execute it so they can stay authentic, feel empowered.
And I think now all listeners understand why you're an inspirational leader, because also the length you answer this question shows that you take care about people. If you don't mind, I would give you a feedback too. If I would call someone in Germany or in the region, if I would like to learn about media, I would call two people. One is my dear friend Uwe Storch from Ferrero, and the second is you, because this is what I believe. I would call you immediately, but I know a lot of people I know who are seniors would call you too. And I think this is also your personal capability. And second, that you gave the time, despite that you are super busy, to make this podcast. And thanks for this, by the way.
Well, thanks for your invitation.
No, no, good. The last question is the scripted one. You already know it. When was the last time you made something for the first time, Jen?
I do it actually constantly. So that's probably a boring answer, but I have so many also personal interests. I have so many professional interests. I'm looking into stuff. So recently, I've been ramping myself up in regard to machine learning and artificial intelligence, also generative intelligence. How is the AI structured? How does it really work? Why would people call it machine intelligence, but not, you know, artificial intelligence, and the different subtleties on that? And by that, I've also, you know, tested out on the large language models and try to profoundly understand it, not superficially. So I'm not so that I'm capable of, you know, also bringing that knowledge to my teams, yeah, because they need to inform about it. On a private side, I'm super heavily invested into, you know, studio technology, music production machines, but also music reproduction. And I'm also super kind of like on a nerd level interested in how these machines and devices work. Yeah. So recently I've been, you know, exploring different sets of valve tubes, understood how operating amps actually function. Yeah, I built a lot of, you know, the cabling myself. So I'm always, yeah, I like to do stuff and dive deep into, yeah, that kind of, you know, technological aspects as well, both hardware, but also software.
And you're making music on your own, or is it more the hardware topic? Or is you do stuff on your own? Well, you're singing, you're playing instruments, or how do I guess it?
Yeah, I can play the guitar. I actually have been a professional guitarist for quite a while, next to my professional, you know, day job life. And I've been producing music, I would say, until 2016 or so. So if you're interested in my music, you can find a lot of my stuff, which I release under my regular name, on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, etc. Yeah, so that is like music probably from more the internet era, but I started playing music, you know, when I was 15 and had professional bands very early stage on. And you could also buy these records, but it was pre-internet era or time. Yeah, so you don't have so much, you know, material, yeah, in the web around it.
That's super interesting. First thing I hear from you, I will definitely put it into the show notes and I will put the Spotify link into it and I will definitely look into it. So we met a super nice leader and a tough leader also from the Meta Group in Europe. Jin is working at the Meta Group on senior levels and you feel over the last minutes that Jin is super curious and inspired about people. You saw it how long he's answering. It's also about what struck me a lot about feedback and reflection. I'm super grateful that you have joined Sharks in the Pool. And thank you so much for joining us and bringing your inspiration into this great audience. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pascal.